Blog Talk Radio. find the time to whine and dine. Your bitch is better than me.
I left you in my space. It's been nothing but your face. Bookmarking memories and enemies and fake chemistry. And I tell my homies, I can't take her no more. I'm a quitter. They say, oh, look at the little baby. He a twitter. All tender. Go figure. Oh, shit. So that's how they see me now. Cause every weight that she put on me is like Instagram, I mean an Instagram of stress and worry. Huh. That's all she wanna do now. Clapping and snapping, chatting and yapping. You want me to get lost in your world? I guess we both gonna be waiting. Well, it was fun while I lasted. Them lies just longer than bonds.
Take up some. all the spaces in between. It's magic when I place you in the blue. An average day is spent all in the sheets. Emphatic when I tell you what you mean
to me.
Chemistry, intimate memory. Every time I give you all my energy, emphasis, never sleep.
Double vision playing all week.
baby, baby. I've been thinking about you crazy, crazy, crazy. Baby, baby, I'm impatient, tell me why you got me waiting. You better make it worth my time, cause I got something sexy on. Alcohol in my cup, I don't want another text, no, no. Time for you to pull up, hope you didn't think that I'd forget about the way you ran them lips. You've been talking real big shit, so I'ma hold you to it.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. What is the deal? What is happening? What is happening with everything else that's going on? Good people, welcome to another installment of Epiphany Radio Presents. Wait a minute. It's two shows in one. It's War Council and Fly Speak Open Mic, the best of both worlds. So I really couldn't decide what to do this time, so we just threw them both together, see what we can get. You know, we have the conversation, scintillating conversation of the War Council, very helpful, along with some open mics, and we get some poetry in here too. Let's do it all. Let's make it all happen. Now, you know, if you're participating, make sure that you press 1 so that when we open these mics, because we're going to keep the mics open, we have real-time responses and reactions while things are happening. In the background, it's going to be kind of cool, so it's nice. Tonight, we're here to do several things, and we're just going to keep the conversation open and throw poems in between, play good music, make sure that we get the vibe. We're going to vibe this evening. We're going to have good conversation, great poetry, and good vibes. That's what we want, good vibes only. Bring it here. Now, there is an open mic. You do what you want, do what you like. You know, just don't say anything that's particularly racist or homophobic or against anyone that's not anything else. You know, we won't permit that here. But if you want some good vibes, we're going to keep showing the vibes is happening. So if you're here, you're participating, make sure that you press 1 as I open these mics. We're going to have some conversation, some current events, some of the things that are going on. We want to know why people are doing this challenge, because it seems like we're always doing a challenge, but we're not really doing things to actually bring us together. So I'm going to open the mics one by one so we can introduce you to dope people that you need to know, you need to understand, especially if they're here from the Epiphany Radio Universe. You should be hanging out with them. So let me get to it. So I'm opening up the mic to La Perla Negra, my favorite Philly John, one half of my favorite Philly Johns of the Love Zone here on the Epiphany Radio Universe. Danielle, are you there?
I'm here. What's happening?
Right. We're gonna keep the vibes good. I think I know who this is, but I forgot somebody too. Area code 973. Could you announce yourself?
Hello, good evening, everyone. This is Edwina.
Yay! That's what I thought it was. I'll get better reading numbers. Hey, Edwina, what's happening?
Hey, nothing much. Good to hear you guys.
What's happening? It's good stuff right here. We rocking right here. Now, I know this has got to be Sir Lawrence. I think that we have coming up. Is this Sir Lawrence?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, actually, I know Sir Lawrence. What's happening? All right. And, of course, this is our station manager, Mr. Van Meadows himself, a.k.a. Poetic. Are you in the building?
Yes, sir, I am in the building. What's happening, my Javi? Everybody
What's
else
happening?
Is here and the sound of my voice. Hope everyone's doing good.
All right. The Bob is straight right now. And of course this is Mr. Dawood himself. Dawood, are you there?
Yes, sir. How's everybody doing?
All right.
Hey,
Dawood. What's happening?
Hello.
Good.
All right, so I see a few people here. When y'all ready, press 1. Let me know, or if you want your mics open, everything else that's going on. So we're mixing it up tonight. We had some war council with some fly speak open mic, and you know how y'all feel about that. We're gonna be able to do some poetry and talk some junk. It's gonna be great.
Nice.
Oh, it's gonna be dope.
Yeah.
How y'all feel about that? That's good stuff. Anyways. In the meantime, in between time, because I think somebody's out in the wind. Dawood, is that you?
In the wind?
No, I'm
in the house, son. Hold on a second.
Okay. I can hear like air. It sounds like air is blowing. I'm not sure.
That might be my fan. Let me change the direction of it. See?
That's the fan.
Why are you trying to
put
it on me?
Oh, we got a fart with stuff.
That's okay. Oh, my bad. I was supposed to go get somebody too. I'm messing up.
Is that better?
No, that's good. Yeah, that's really,
okay.
Really good.
All right.
So I was supposed to go get. My bad. I'm just messing up right now. Okay. Let me just make sure I get this correct. So, wait a second. Where's my sound? My sound is missing. Hold on for a second. This is crazy. Wait a second. Where's my music at? All right. So, let's talk some current events while we're at it. Because we're doing War Council, we want to do this thing called current events. You know, we talk about the stuff that's happening in the news, the things that particularly affect us, our community, the things that are in the limelight, all those things affecting our community as it stands. I know, Dawood, you had a couple questions because we were going to talk about relationships and stuff like that. I particularly wanted to talk about this P.J. Washington and Brittany Renner thing that's going on, you know, because it's age old. And, what we decide upon in our relationships and things of that sort. But Dawood, what do you want to bring to the table?
Okay, so assuming that this is consistent with the conversation that we were talking about earlier, we were talking about what's going on with black people. So what I wanted to bring to the table is this. One of the biggest things that we all have been kind of wrestling with this weekend is people's criticism or praise of what happened with Sister Sha'Carri Richardson. And, you know, whatever side that you come down on that, because she came in last, almost last in the race, some people were criticizing her, some people were putting her down and putting down her post, you know, basically post-performance, what you call interview. And I think that in a lot of ways, a lot of us really just are, I don't know what you want to say. I'll put the question out here today. Do you think that the younger black men and women who are in entertainment, sports, or whatever, do you think that they're entitled, soft, or do you think that we are being much harder on them than we really should be? Now, mind you, I have my children are millennial children, and so I kind of am biased here. Whenever I see people criticizing young black men or women, it hits me in my heart because I have younger children. My oldest daughter is 24. My youngest daughter is 7. And I totally understand and resonate with the millennial generation. I work with them through different things. You know, some of them are, you know, in certain ways and some of them in other ways. But, you know, before I say anything on my behalf, I want to give that to the panel. Do you think that we're coddling the younger generation? Do you think that they've come out lazy, they don't want to work, yada, yada, what people are saying? Or do you think that they're here to do something different? What is your thought?
Hello?
I go first. Yeah.
Yep.
Can I speak? Is this okay?
Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. I was going to wait until last because I feel like I might be in the same generation as Daoud. We're a little bit removed from this attention culture that these kids live in. It's like people's attention towards what's going on with them is so important that it's hard to know whether it's appropriate to encourage them versus warn them. And I fall into the same category. I have children between the ages of 27 and 10. And I feel the same way, like with my 10-year-old. How much do you expose her to and warn her about beforehand versus how much room do you give her to expand and grow and create in her own ideals? And I feel the same way with Sha'Carri. I wish that someone could tell her that you bust your behind to get where you are and the attention can't really mean as much as, you know, what is perceived and lost by people's attention or their positive opinions of you, you know? That's all I wanted to say.
That was beautiful.
Thank you.
That really was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else would like to answer that?
Yeah. I don't think there's any more criticism than there has always been. What I do think is not enough communication with a lot of these children of this generation, and they are pretty much going on their own. They want to be exposed, regardless what age, what time, whether we tell them or not, because of the technology that is available to us now. I do think there is a specific time that you should talk to them about certain things. But I don't think we're being any more harsh than we already have been throughout the generation. I just think we need to sit down. Like me and my late husband, we used to take the time and talk to our kids about everything. Nothing was off limit. As long as it was a specific age that they were at, that we thought that they could handle it, they could comprehend it. And if they didn't, we took the time to explain it to them. And it's not enough of us as adults that are taking the time out to do that. Communication is key. And it's not enough of us talking to them and letting them know what else is going on in life from our experiences and what could possibly happen to them. it's just like leave them to their own devices, and there's a lot of destructive stuff out there that they are not they're not prepared for. And when they do come upon it, they are left to their own devices, and I think this is why they run rampant like they do. And then people develop this bad taste in their mouth for the behavior that they're displaying, but they don't realize these kids are being left to their own, to themselves. That's my take.
Okay, I just brought in Angel Kim. Angel Kim, you there? Hello, Angel Kim? Hello, Angel Kim? All right.
She muted.
What'd you see that? Yeah, I know. She might be muted. I'm gonna go find out. And I brought in his poet, who I just added in on the bottom that just came to the conversation. Also, when you guys are talking, you know, make sure that you say your name first before, so we know who we're talking to, and so the callers know who they're addressing. All right. So continue on.
That was pretty much my take. It's a lack of communication.
That's
I don't know why. It's a lot of conditioning factors. I think a lot of these parents are trying to be their kids' friends and live their own lives instead of being responsible adults. They want to go out and do what they want to do and just push the responsibility of being accountable for their children. And I think that's where a lot of the lack of communication falls in as well. It's me, Danielle, the Perla Negra, y'all. Y'all know who it is. And that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Point you make. Great point, Danielle.
My take on the whole thing is this. I feel like we're living in a world where everybody wants the next generation to have it exactly as hard as we had it. And what I feel is that the younger generation that we have now, in the spiritual world, they call them undergo adults. And they are changing the way that we see things, do things, and making it different. Not necessarily easy, but different. I think we have a system. And you said not to use any sort of bad words, but I have to say this word. We sort of have like sort of a white supremacist system that holds a certain ideal that didn't work for so many years. And now that these young people are threatening to overthrow it, we are pushing back on it, even though we were groaning under the pressure of it as we were growing up. So I'm not saying that we're coddling young people. I'm not saying that we're, just excusing everything that they do. But the thing is, sometimes I have to stop and ask myself, before I say you can't take it, why did I take it? You understand what I'm saying,
right,
y'all? Before I say that you too soft, why was I even under it in the first place? And I'll give you a quick example, and then I'm going to pass the mic. I am a second generation electronic security and locksmith technician. My son is actually third generation. So my dad did the same thing that I do that my son does. And my dad, when he was younger, had to drive out to Syosset, New York, from Brooklyn. It was like a two-hour drive or something like that, like two or three times a week in order to go to law and license school. Me, myself, I was able to drive down to Queens because I lived in upstate New York. I was able to drive down to Queens, stay with my sister, and go to law license school, so it was a little bit easier for me. My son did it online. Now, Republican and established people's logic would be, man, you need to experience the same hardship that I experienced, or you're not going to respect it. That's kind of crazy to me, because the reality of it is him going to school in the comfort of his own home is progress, because he didn't have to. For me, when I went to law license school, it was do or die. And I diverted all my funds. I'm talking about child support, car payments, everything to law and license school, because I just knew I had to get out of the situation that I was in. My car got repossessed while I was in the law and license school. That's a true story. My car got repossessed. My son was able to go to law and license school in the comfort of his own home every Saturday, you know, like it was Saturday morning cartoons. And with the logic of the world that we're living today, it's almost like a lot of us as adults, we wanted our child to drive out the psiosis 2-3 times a week, like my dad did. And that's crazy. To me, I just think that when we say that these children are soft and they're not experiencing enough hardship and all this other stuff, I feel like we got to just step back and ask ourselves, why should they? Because look what the hell happened to us when we went under it. And I'll close by saying this. My teacher, who made me the man that I am today, he died at the age of 50 with heart trouble, diabetes, high blood pressure. Guess what? In 3 months, I'm going to be 50. And if anybody looked at me, I ain't got none of those problems. And so, therefore, I'm not saying I'm better than him. But what I am saying is it's a beautiful thing that I learned from his example, and I didn't do what he did. I feel like a lot of us are mad because our children are not suffering the same way we did. And that's some sick shit to me. And I'm not saying that about what anybody says on this panel or anybody will say. That's just my take on why so many people is mashing our security riches.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's Sir Lawrence.
I mean, let me unmute. All right, who is that? Sir Lawrence? Go ahead, Sir Lawrence. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Now, you know, it's interesting because I think that it all started with the baby boomer generation being too protective. Okay? It was like, you know, they don't need to go outside, you know, put some kind of electronic in their hand. I think this is one of the toughest times to grow up in, period. I'm not excusing anything, you know, at the same time, because it's frustrating. But I think along with, you know, the overprotection, the no matter what, they had to come home with the trophy. No matter what, they had to come home with some kind of first place notion without even earning it. But that was just something that my child is going to have, this kind of thing. Okay, so then that was the seed. And then, you know, like when I was coming up, you know, to get a vehicle, you got a bucket. So that bucket made you appreciate it, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you get a youngster nowadays, and I'm not pointing like that necessarily, but you get them a brand new car. A lot of them, they haven't even opened up the hood to even know that there's a hood that lift up. And and for me, that's that softness thing. I mean, because it's like, well, I don't need to know. Well, yes, you do. You do need to know that, because there's so many other things that'll help you forward in life. But I think overall, misunderstanding the technological age with the advancement, but there's a lot of stuff that has been omitted that we came up with along the way. That's why they don't communicate. They don't, because they've lost the art of communication in terms of talking. Okay, did you develop? You're developing a code to text message. Okay, they quelled this one teacher because the final exam was to write a paragraph, handwritten a paragraph, not sheet. And the students couldn't pass it. The parents cried foul, which goes back to my previous statement. We're being too protective. And then you couple technology with it, and then you just got a bad mix.
Hello, Matthew.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, this is this poet, everybody. I wanted to jump in here about the millennials, because I have millennial children who are in that you know, group. And I have to say that as the children go on, as the years go on, and children come and all of these different generations pop up and what have you, that I have to attribute some of the issues that they endure, some of the issues that we can see that are visible
to us so that we know that goes on with them. So number one, these kids these days have way more screen time than we used to have, or even generation after us. The screen, when you have children and they have to, and now, of course, we do it online school for a lot of places because of COVID. When you have their telephone, iPad, tablet, TV, computer, that's all they do. Like, that's all they do. So, yes, they can learn. There's an unlimited amount of, a plethora of information there. It's true. But at the same token, you have to understand just as much as the good that they're seeing on those screens, there's a lot of bad coming through those screens. And so a lot of the things that we need to teach them to push it away or put it down and teach them and instill in them ourselves, our lives are busy. They're so busy, caught up, and everybody's got screen time. And there are certain things that we should be teaching them or should have taught them that they learned from a screen. See what I'm saying? And so now we're saying the after-effects.
Somebody needs to mute them.
Someone
needs Mike. Get Mike.
I got it. I know where that's coming from. Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. And so when you see that and that, you know, this, you can see the characteristics, so many traits they have, and you look at them and say, are you crazy? Like, what is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? But it's just not that they're crazy. It's that there's just a different way. What seemed normal or routine to us might seem crazy to them because of how we learned it. And what seems normal and routine to them might seem crazy to us because of how they learned it. You see what I'm saying? So there needs to be less screen time, and I hate to say it, more and more and more as children are born. I'm seeing babies acclimated to phones as early as 4 and 5 months. You know what I'm saying? And so we have to look at, when we have babies that's acclimated to screen time that young, a lot of parents, I didn't, but a lot of parents, I was drastic. Like, my son's 23. I have a 21-year-old daughter, and I have a 17-year-old, okay? And my son, my kids know, I will snatch it away, take it away, put it up for months. I don't care. I remember throwing my son's PlayStation out the front door. I don't care. Because your mind is so wrapped up and warped in that you're spending way too much time in front of a screen. I'll make them read a book. Let's do something tangible. Write. Let's do something. Now these kids, okay, they could. Now, of course, we have people who can't write in cursive. I'm sure pretty much every person on this line knows how to write in cursive, but I bet you most of our children don't. And now, the way it's going, some of these kids won't even know how to write in print. All they'll know how to do is type. You know? Because back in our day, we probably thought it was drastic that they wouldn't teach cursive anymore. But they've taken it totally out of the curriculum. It's totally removed. You know? And so when we're writing something and we write something in cursive, do you know our children will not, our children, I know that sounds southern and south in this country right now. I'm in Georgia, y'all, from Texas, excuse me. But our children, if we write a letter, if we dare write a letter in cursive, I can't, what is this? I can't read that. And that's sad. And so I think we need to revisit the whole, you know, technology thing and begin to set boundaries and talk to them and teach them how to set boundaries so they can set boundaries for their children. Because what we have is it just goes on. It gets more and more drastic every single year. And it's at the point that all they know is technology. They don't go outside to play. There's no going to the park hardly. The natural things that we enjoyed in life, they don't partake of it anymore. And so that aspect of being a kid is lost, because the kids are doing what the grown folks are doing in front of a screen all day, all night. My name is Sis Poet, and I'm done speaking.
You made some good points.
Absolutely.
This is
a lot of good points.
This is Edwina.
wanted to just say, have anybody ever seen that post where it said, I'm sorry, was somebody saying something? Hard to hear.
No, but, go ahead.
No, it's on you.
It was a post that said, it was saying that children are, you get a different person from children that are raised on survival versus those that are raised on love. And I think that that is a big part of the conversation that we're having here is that, you know, you cannot, if we would have looked at the higher, any other previous way of living and what the parents of that time were preparing the children for, that's the energy that the, you know, you can't really change that. But that's why it's two generations away making statements about the time now. We can't really go back to a time where this pandemic proved it. We can't go back to a time when there wasn't technology, but we can go to a time where we're preparing them for the world that they exist in now. And if we're looking at it from a place of survival and the survival of what was before versus the preparation for what is to come, I think that that's where the energy is different, because they're here in this world and they're going to attract certain things no matter what. It's just a matter of whether we respect the, you know, what's expected of this generation versus trying to get them to go back to a place that was like what we grew up, because it was totally, I grew up before the kids were planking, and now the kids that were planking are the parents. So I can't really relate to how those people, you know, that generation might view raising their children. But my 27-year-old daughter, she has an autistic son and she has a 3-year-old. And I see a level of communication with her children and understanding and support that I don't even understand. I still, you know, go old school, and it might not work. It won't work in this day and age. I think we're preparing them for something different. So we have to kind of take a different approach. And I think that's a balance with what Daoud was saying before about, you know, we can't stagnate them in our beliefs from what we had to be prepared for, because the world that they're preparing for is much different, I think. Because I look at my 10-year-old and she came and asked me what a pansexual was, and I had to take my phone to the side and look it up. I wasn't prepared to have that conversation. Right. With her, she could write in cursive, and I prepare her for things like that, but I didn't prepare her for video games on YouTube leading her to ways to get onto apps that I don't allow her on, and, you know, tutorials that tell her how to break all of the codes and to get around you're not preparing them for the old ways. You know, it's good for them to know them, but it is most important for them to know them, and it's most important to teach them self-direction and self-love and understanding, because they have to, they're trailblazers in a place that we don't quite understand because it is new. And that's just my perspective on it. I'm sorry.
All right, that's what's up. So the one thing I just wanted to bring up about Sha'Carri Richardson is that the fact that people were so gleeful that she came in last when she's been coming in first, and the fact of that the rules, the Olympic rules, we've had Olympians smoke weed, Michael Phelps, we've had Olympians tell lies about what it is that they did and how they did it and things of that sort, and they still wasn't penalized as much as she was penalized. So, you know, we know that the system is unbalanced between how people are doing things. One of the things that I had been following was the tennis player Naomi. What is Naomi? What's her last name?
Osaka.
I can't think of it. Osaka. Thank you. Right. Mm-hmm. And the fact is that like Naomi Osaka and the other gymnast, I forgot her name as well, where they're like, we need a break. We need mental breaks. And there were
Simone
people
Biles.
Who just basically, yeah, Simone Biles. And they were talking about how, you know, basically, like they should be doing their jobs. They should do this, you know, the same thing, shut up and dribble and all this other stuff. And you see Fox News doing all these reporting, people coming in on sports centers and speaking all these crazy things. And with this particular generation, those who've actually worked for things, those who've actually grinded. Like, imagine you've been doing this gymnastics and you're the world's most decorated gymnast and you have one off day. You have one off day. Now I'm a soccer. Mm-hmm. Like, yo, listen.
And everybody
even the thing, and everybody comes for you for that particular day. And then, you know, you have some kids, you know, where they don't participate, you know, everybody gets a participation award. And so I'm very much with the idea, you know, I grew up in a generation where basically you either won or you lost. You know, if you lost, you just got to keep playing till you get better, you know. Mm-hmm. And I tell people all the time, I fail all the time. It's okay to fail because it's what you learn from the failures. And I think some of the kids that are in our in that particular generation that are coming, they don't know what it's like to have abject, utter failure. They don't know what that looks like. Some of them do, right? Some of them do. And some, like, I noticed that certain people from our generation, and pretty much I know certain people here who have raised their children, I've seen them, right? They can teach failure as a learning, as a tool and lesson, but there are certain kids who don't know what that looked like, don't know what it sounds like, doesn't know what it feels like. There's a participation award. There's certain things that happen. And at the same time, when people who have worked as hard as they possibly work, like a, you know, like a Sha'Carri Richardson, as soon as they fail, they go, aha, look at you. Look at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, look at you. And it's like we have this whole thing where we love to see people fall. And I think that's one of the things that I think is part of the problem, that with this new generation, like, they love to see people fall. They love to see people getting taken down. Like, it's a part of the culture, mm-hmm. you know. It's a part of how certain things occur when we want those things. And there are kids who literally didn't earn anything, but they love to see people fall. They love to see things happen. They love to see all this different stuff. I remember some years ago when I was the unit director of Boys and Girls Club, I literally went to a conference in Atlanta to tell them that they were literally banging through the internet, and everybody thought I was crazy. They was like, you're crazy. How can they bang through the internet? I was like, they're going up to each other's houses where people live, and they're filming videos and putting it out on YouTube. And everybody thought I was crazy, right? Mm-hmm. This generation, the cyberbullying, the way that they approach people, everything that they do is so much more advanced. It's crazy. Like, it's to the point where like, literally, like, they text things. I remember there was a thing that we had when I used to teach. They had a thing where it was like Albany's All-Stars, and they were literally putting up sex videos of certain people on this thing on Facebook. Before Facebook, you know, the algorithm got crazy and just capping everybody for shit for 3-4 years ago. It's capping everybody now. But then they literally had these sites where these high schoolers were really going forth, having sex with people and putting it up. Huh. And putting on, you know, and it was crazy. Like, so this generation, they cap in a completely different manner that we will never be used to or understand. In any sense of the word. You know, but was there anything else you wanted to add to the discussion before we moved on?
I did, Mom.
No,
this poet.
Okay,
go ahead. I just want to say that, well, I just want to say real quickly that what Edwina said, man, that was fantastic, because I think that we can all disagree on this, but one thing that we have to agree on is the world that our children are growing up in, we are not going to live in. This is their world. So we cannot prepare them for our world. We got to prepare them for their world. Somebody's got something in the back. But either way, much love to that whole explanation that she gave, because it was fantastic. It really was. And I agree with a lot of what Danielle said about communication and having a discussion with your children, because if you don't, I mean, that really brings it all together. If you don't have a discussion with your children, then you don't really bridge what came before and what is now. Because I always look at myself as an in-betweener. I was born at the end of the height of the Black Power movement that started in the 70s. I was born at the end of that. And, you know, unfortunately, I didn't get a chance to see it at its glory. But now I am a part of the new one that's coming up, and I can tell the younger ones what we used to do and how things used to go, but also allow them to do what they're going to do in their way, shape, or form. So I don't come off as an old fuddy-duddy. I don't come off as a person that's, like, trying to tell them where my day was, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't do that because they have to carry it on, and I've already done my 20, 30 years in the movement. I'm making money now. You know what I'm saying? So I advise them as far as what I grew up on and my sacrifice. But the thing is, again, it's like I don't want them to sacrifice and throw their life away like I did and say, the hell with family, it's about the movement. I don't want them to do that. So I think that it's very important for us to understand that our children are growing up in a world that we have no idea about, and we're not going to run. They're going to run it, and it's a different reality.
Yeah, that's a good point. Mo, when you spoke about our people and how that some of our people like to see others fail, with the whole Shikara issue, that disheartens me that a lot of us were not more understanding to her plight. That baby, you know, she lost her mom. They tried to tear her down for smoking marijuana. Her head was completely out of the game, you know. Mm-hmm. And so when she came in, and she felt she hadn't really had an opportunity to, you know, to really, like, express herself like she really wanted to. And I think she took that time, and a lot of the stuff that she said in that interview, the last interview that she did when she lost that race, was she was addressing all of the stuff that had been said, you know, from – you know, what happened with her previously. And the baby, she was just, like, so emotional. She really was. And I don't think that anybody appreciated that, what she had been through. And just really to just say, I'm here. It's okay. You know, and just somebody to reach out to her and let her vent. And yeah, she did it on national television and whatever, but she felt like she had something to prove to the world because of what they did to her. And on the next token of, you know, these kids having a world that we don't understand, no, I don't agree with that. Because guess what? We can stop understanding the day that we die. But until we die, until we leave here, we can strive to understand their world, which we're still living it. It's my world, too. You know what I'm saying? So we have to find balance, and we have to come in together. And find, we have to live here together. We have to dwell here together. You know what I'm saying? We have to function here together. It's our world. It's not theirs. You know, it's ours. And they can benefit from things from our past, just like we can benefit from things that they're doing now and in the future. There does have to be a balance. But I don't think that we can just discard or throw away everything that we've been through because it is very much so relevant. And there's a certain strength that we have from what we've gone through that's going to help pull them through the things that's to come in the future.
Very well said, sis.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Good people. It is 9:59. We will be taking a commercial break real quick at the top of the hour, which is now. Hold on, let me make sure I got this queued up so it'll work. And we're going to talk a little bit about relationships real quick. I think it'll be nice, but hold on, let's work this out real quick. And away we go. This is Epiphany Radio.
Epiphany Radio, the Real Entertainment Network. Your number one hit station in town. This is Sandy, and you're listening to Epiphany Radio, the for real entertainment network. Peace, blessings, and one love.
Welcome back. This is Epiphany Radio Universe presents War Council Philosophy Open Mic. We're over on the War Council portion of doing certain things, but we're about to get into some poetry very shortly to make sure everything else is going on. But we're going to talk a little bit about relationships and things that are happening, because I was reading this ongoing conversation between this basketball player, P.J. Washington, and the mother of his child, who's Brittany Renner. And they welcomed the child earlier this year. But there was something that she basically wants $200,000 a month, you know, until the child turns 18, you know. And the thing is that she was on some podcast or something that was happening where a guy suggested that you have to go raw in order for it to happen, and how literally, you know, they feel like she might have trapped him or did something, you know, so that she can have anything else that was happening. And then that led to everything else. And then she said basically she's trapped by having the baby with him, you know. And so she's basically been saying that I'm trapped by, my life has changed. I'm stuck, literally the thing is about that is that, you know, there's a role reversal. And of course, you know, people are on both sides arguing and everything else. So I bring this before, essentially, the War Council and the people who are here who may not be a part of War Council. Is it possible, right, for a woman to be trapped by an NBA player? Is it possible?
All the time. I think it's all the time. But, see, they trap themselves. It's not so much the player that's trapping them. They trap themselves because I don't think a lot of these relationships, when they start out, with these guys not having anything. These women come into these men's lives after they get at a certain status. And a lot of them are gold diggers. And their intentions are to trap these men. So, you know what? Yeah, I spoke a little too soon. I don't know. I don't think they're trapped by these men. Unless they have a particular mental thing going on where they're just very controlling and they're like, you're not going to leave me. You're mine. Other than that, no. And I want to know, what the hell kind of living are you doing where you need over $100,000 a month? What are you doing? Even if you are accustomed to that lifestyle with your husband, don't nobody need that much money a month. I don't get it.
Anybody else want to contribute to that? Anybody?
Well, I'm going to say this. If you have a child by a woman as a man, you simply have to man up and take care of it. It's really just that simple. And if you're living an enhanced lifestyle, like an NBA player, then you got to take care of her too. You know, and that's the way the law is. You grew up knowing the law. Is it fair? It's probably not fair, but it's not also not fair that you didn't protect yourself. I just know that, man, there's many dudes that I know, and we had children by women that we may not necessarily have wanted to be with or whatever, whether inside of marriage or outside of marriage. And the bottom line is that we had them, we had to take care of the children. And in some cases, we had to take care of the mother. That's just the way it is. And to me, I think that, and I think I have a minority view on this when it comes to men, because men kind of get at me by saying this, but I said this before and I'll say it again. there's a certain level of care that you should give the children's mother, because that's their mother, and it affects their psychology, what happens to their mother and the condition of their mother. So if you're going to get on some, well, you know, that's just my child and F their mother, and their mother's in a bad condition, that doesn't affect the child. That doesn't affect the child's emotional well-being. And you may say it's not fair, but you had the right to strap up. So this is kind of what you signed up for. People were talking about Nas and how Nas had a child by a certain woman, and, you know what I'm saying, like, should he take care of her and all this other stuff. And, you know, once the child got to be 18, 21 and went through college, people was like, well, he doesn't have to anymore. I'd like to think that if I was Nas and I had several million dollars, what the hell is taking care of that one woman to him? I don't know. I don't know, y'all. I really don't. I find that this world that we live in is crazy and selfish, where a man can sign a deal with Beats by Dre and make millions of dollars and then bitch over taking care of a woman that gave him the most precious thing in the world, and that's a child. You understand? How much money would it really cost that man to take care of that woman, even if she was derelict in her duty? I don't know. But what I do know is that if you're out there and you're making massive million-dollar deals and that's your children's mother, I would take care of her within reason. I wouldn't give her everything I have, but I would take care of her simply because, you mean, like, I got several millions. I got several millions. What I'm supposed to do with $500,000 that I could be taking care of they mother with, you understand, just for the sake of their sight. I don't know. Do you understand where I'm coming from with this?
I understand where you're coming from, but I also have a disagreement with it. It's like if we look at Earthquake, right? So Earthquake paid off his child support early, right? So he paid it off. He paid his child support because he's like I don't have the benefit or the thing. So he always was paying down on something, and so when she had that money, she didn't think about the future. She just spent it on whatever she spent it on. And then as soon as his son turned 18, you know, like, it stopped. And then she went on all the shows. She went on all the things, you know, trying to browbeat him, saying that he should provide more money. Same thing happened with Carmen Bryan, who was the mother of Nas's daughter. You know, when she turned a certain age, the money stopped, and then she went on this whole thing saying, like, how Nas should still be paying for her, even though the child was 18 and everything else like that. I think that in a certain sense of when you come to certain people, like, we have to look at reputation, character, and what people actually do. And I think that he had a choice too, right? He had a choice. He could have strapped up. He could have done a whole bunch of other things to prevent himself from having a child, right? But he chose to not. So he's kind of stuck with the literal reality of it. But at the same time, you know, to request that amount of money and not be married to him and not have supported his lifestyle, as not have been with him from day one, not to have done all these different things to request all that around the child, you don't need that amount of money, period, to raise any child.
No, I agree with you that amount of money is ridiculous, but I'm talking about just reasonably taking care of somebody who mentally can't really take care of themselves.
I'm going to get into it, but at the same time, regardless of the fact, we're talking about the value of it, right? She's overestimating the value of what it is that is supposed to be happening because she wants a certain lifestyle as it happens, regardless of the fact of what goes on with the child. Like, literally, if we look at somebody like, what you call it, he plays for the Nets. He was on the Celtics, and now he's on the Nets, right? What he did with one of his mothers as a child, he prearranged everything that she was only getting, you know, like $5,000 to $10,000 a month. That's all she got. And
right.
then she was upset
right.
because she basically signed up to do that. He said, whatever else that the child needs, I will provide directly. The same thing that Earthquake said. He's like, she's not counting the things that I do directly for my child. She's counting the things that come into her hands and what she wants.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that sense, She wants that money to decide what kind of lifestyle that she wants in order to have the things that she wants to do. Like, we do know that there are people who are professionals at this. You know, we can look at Amber Rose. We can listen, and I'm not trying to slut shame or do anything of the sort. I'm not saying that, but there are certain people who have made a lifestyle out of being able to find particular players and do particular things and have particular ways because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then in order for that to have, you know, in order for them to have a certain type of lifestyle, having a child is a great bargaining chip, whether we like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that we do have to consider, you know. But, you know, but on the lesser end, you know, on the lesser end, we look at people who have regular lifestyles and, you know, regular child support, you know, it's not the same thing. But somebody who says, yeah, I need $200,000 a month. It's almost the same thing with Khalees. Khalees asked Nas for so much more amount of money for their son, you know, because that's what it is. Move to a different state to achieve more money. Move to California so they can have more money. You know, did all these different things that were happening. Was on a video with a man who slept with her, who took a video of her in the bed and all this other crazy stuff. She did all of that to achieve a certain amount of money for their son. You know?
I mean, I just want to throw this out here, and hopefully I want the council to speak on it if they can. But in my judgment, like, we got a lot of Negroes nowadays talking about polygamy. And saying, I want polygamy, I want more than one wife, this, that, and the next one. And now you got these NBA players running around getting these chicks pregnant and not wanting to take care of these chicks. That's not polygamy. And so I just think that this is what I'd be thinking of when I'd be hearing this kind of stuff, where dudes be advocating for polygamy. You're not really about that life, because if you think that being a multimillionaire and taking care of one woman that had your child is a bad thing, you're not built for polygamy. Because polygamy is about taking care of entire families. And it's not just about having sex. You might as well say that you want threesomes, foursomes, or swinging, but you're not really down for polygamy, because polygamy is bringing together families. If you have a child by a woman or multiple children by a woman, and then you have multiple children by another woman, as a man, you're still the patriarch of that family. That's the bottom line. And the reality of it is that you are standing for multiple women. You have to be the emotional protector and provider for multiple women and multiple children. And here we go, jumping on all of these forums as polygamous men, not saying I am, but I'm just saying dudes that are about say they about that life, and the first time you got to pay something extra, you got a problem with it. So to me, that has always been the problem with dudes who jack polygamy, is you're really not about that life, because if you had the money, you wouldn't take care of families. And polygamy, and the reality of it is, polygamy is a system that comes from our ancestors. Is it right in the way our ancestors thought for you to have abundance, i.e. a million, and you don't take care of that woman? Like, I just don't know. I really don't. I do agree that some of these women that ask for a lot more, that's kind of evil. But like I said, taking care of them for the rest of their life, if you're a multimillionaire, dude, like, come on. Y'all can comment on it. That's the way I feel about it.
Yeah, I'm not doing that. Okay, I don't care if I'm a multimillionaire or not. Obviously, you made a decision to want out of this whatever we had going on, whether it be a marriage, whether it be a union, you want it out. All right, if you make the decision you want out and you just want the benefits of my child, no, you're not entitled to me taking care of you. You lost that luxury the moment you wanted out, period. Taking care of my child is one thing. Taking care of you, I don't have to. You're not my responsibility. The child is my responsibility. Now, going back to the young lady with the ridiculous amount of money, well, we say it's ridiculous. I say it's ridiculous. However, she's making a point of what she wants before they go to court, right?
Right.
That's a fair statement, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because she probably knows that if they go to court, and if he goes to court and they go to court and do this through child support, she's probably going to end up getting more, because she's probably not working, and he is the breadwinner. He's making most of the money, so she doesn't have to work. But what he will do is take care of his child. And the courts and the legal system will say, well, sir, you have to pay XYZ amount of money. She's probably making it easy for him by saying that that's what she wants. Now, we all know it doesn't take that much to raise a child. That's to support her lifestyle.
Have you ever thought about creating your own?
But me taking care of,
like, where
I'm not taking care of any one of my children's mother. Two of them have already got husbands.
Virtually and handling tasks for them.
And I'm not doing that.
You have been reading my mind.
I'm taking care of my children. They are my responsibility. Yes, I am the patriarch of the family, but I'm only the patriarch of my children.
I wanted to also add. No, go ahead. I'm sorry, man. I didn't want to cut you off. Go ahead.
No. You good? Nah, just, you know, that's because
that's
the
subject.
Can a woman
chime in?
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. Ladies first, please.
Man, we still running.
Thank you. I want to give it from a couple of perspectives, y'all. I want to say, first of all, whether the woman, and I'm just going to be completely real, okay? Even if she was getting a little bit of child support or a lot, we all know that majority of the time, not all of that money is spent on those children. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So most women, now I would say many women who are in that position and have a child and something goes left with the relationship, and especially if he don't have a lot of money, what's the first vindictive thing they want to do, right? Go put him on child support. So the whole thing about that, her, first of all, the $200,000 a month, that's her emotional plea. Number one, she's mad.
Yeah.
She's mad. And she might get, depending on the circumstances of whatever is going on. And so I just think that even though the man might make all this money, and I think the goal is to have the child to have the similar lifestyle of their father. But I think if that's the case, then give him custody. You understand?
Absolutely.
Then if that's the case, let's have joint custody to where, how about nobody pay child support and we just split everything? But see, that's not going to work because, again, you have a lot of females who are chasing, hunting money. And the reason I can talk on this is because I have never been that sick, even with my kids. I put child support, I'm not putting myself out there, whatever. I'm very open and very vulnerable. My children, I have three children, okay? And my children's fathers, with an S, I only put child support on one of them, the first one, and he's 23 now. But I did that because they pressure you, and I was mad and angry and upset. But with the other one, I was just like, you know what? I don't want these people in my business. And I didn't hate him so much that I wanted to put them in his business, you see? So I think that's really mature. And, of course, yes, a man has to take care of his child, too. My whole take on that, let me get on these men. I don't feel the government need to make a man take care of nothing. You understand? If a man know that's his child and he not with the woman, okay, cool. But you know you still have to take care of your baby. And a lot of times, you know, that it's just sad that we have to go run to Uncle Sam or, you know, to help to get the men or our men to take care of the kids. You know, this goes so many different ways, y'all, for real. So, to be completely real, all the $200,000, probably $2,000, depending on what school and this and that, probably $2,000 might go towards that kid a month, maybe. And that kid will still be fine and happy. If you guys know, if you spend $2,000 on your regular child that's not sick, no medical issues, a month, that child will have a major mistake. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
But
I mean,
she has $200,000 she's asking for. So then she got $198,000 left a month to do whatever she want to do, travel, be on our new housewives show or whatever it is. And then with the polygamy, I have been asked, that question has, I've been asked 5 times to be in polygamous marriage. 5 different men. I don't know what it is, if I have a sign on my head or what. 2 of them were very well off and wealthy and in the actual biblical position or ancestral position to be able to do that and support those wives. The other 3 was just busters who really just had some weird sexual thing that they thought it was going to be. not understanding that, yo, if you want to have all these wives, you have to be able to have provision to care for these wives. But there was one guy who his thing was, he was young, he was like 30. His thing was he wanted five wives. His whole M.O. was he wanted to go, he wanted to stay home and have all of his women work and bring everything in. You know? And he never told me that. I knew that by way of spirit. And when I confronted him on it, he was like, you're absolutely right. And I said, that's sorry. Because what man want to have five women go out and work for them and bring him back all everything and she having the children and she taking care of the kids and you're behind you sitting up there? No, it don't work like that. So I'm just going to say this. As a people, we got some things to work out. My name is Ms. Ford. I'm done speaking.
I like to chime in if that's okay.
Go ahead.
Hi, this is Angel Kim. I first want to address who was speaking, not his word, but the gentleman that was speaking before, when he said that the woman opted out of the relationship and that was her choice. True, it might have been her choice, but not all the time is the relationship healthy enough to stay in. So we need to look at that as well. Don't make it seem like she just left and only wants to reap the benefits of the child support, because a lot of times, a lot of these athletes are not faithful. A lot of these athletes are abusers. And they, you know, now don't get me wrong, you got those gold diggers out there that target athletes and intentionally try to get pregnant by these athletes, so they are taken care of. But you also got to look at those many women that did not target athletes, who actually were in love and got treated like dirt. So if part of the benefit of them having a child, you know, for that man to take care of that child, I look at it like this. Even if it wasn't an athlete, like for instance my son, I can use him as an example. When I was raising him, his dad didn't do anything. And I told his dad, I don't even care to put you on child support because I don't care about your money. I just want you to spend time with your child. Call your child. That's a young man that I'm raising, and he needs a man in his life. Not one time did he pick up a phone. Not one time did he come to one sport event. My son was a star athlete. He was also in the band, as in the drum line. He never came to one competition. He finally showed up at his graduation, high school graduation, and he was made to come then. Now, on the flip side, my son is now a father. He has a beautiful four-year-old daughter. He catches pure D hell from his baby mama. She, matter of fact, he hasn't seen his baby in over a month, because she won't allow him to. For her fourth birthday on the night, we didn't get to see her at all. And this is us begging to see her. We got brand new items here for her, clothes, toys, everything, that she grows out of so fast because we don't get to see her, all because she's not. He put himself on child support because she was so busy running around talking about what he didn't do. Now, he's paying almost $1,000 a month, $955 a month. And she lied to the judge, even though he was paying all the bills, and said that he never gave her a dime while the baby was born. And they tried to put him on back child support for that, even though he had proof that he was taking care of the child. And even with paying that much, he still catches hell trying to see his child. You have those women out there that are like that, that are just evil.
Yeah.
But you also have those women out there that are not. Now, I look at it like this. Does he want to pay that much child support? I'm pretty sure he does, and he's 26. Yet, in order to take care of his child, he's going to pay that. At the same time, guess what? That child is not going to spend $1,000 a month. So we already know that child, that money, is going towards her as well. A lot of times you're going to have to take care of the mother to take care of the child. Because if she's on the street, guess where the child is? On the street with her. It's just, I mean, it's one of those double-edged swords. So you have to look at that. But to say that, you know,
a woman chose not to be with a guy, I mean, yeah, that is true. But why did she make that decision is what we need to look at.
All right. Was that Sir Lawrence? Was that you that wanted to say something? I wasn't sure. If not, I just wanted to, absolutely, we see people, I've been through that with my ex-wife. Many of us have experienced that whole keep the child away from you, I'm going to punish you because I know you love your child and things of that sort. And, mm-hmm. and you know, it's reasonable to provide something that goes beyond the caretaking of the child, but in certain cases, when it's excessive, where it's excessive, and it's like to the point where it's like, well, now, like for example, in earthquakes, his ex-wife, she's like, well, he should still be giving me money, and he's like, I'm not giving you any money. He's like, it's over with. You're gonna have to figure out what to do with yourself. You're gonna have to get a job. You're gonna have to work. You're gonna have to do these things. And so for me, like if you were with that person, for example, in the case of Mike Epps' wife, or where you've been with them every step of the way, you're entitled. You are absolutely entitled to a portion. Like you literally, if you get a divorce, you can actually ask for monetary consideration for whatever degrees or anything that they happen. But in this case, in particular, she literally knew, listen, this is something that I could literally be making money from having that. And there are certain people who professionally, that's what they do. Like, Tay Heckert or something like that. Tay Heckert started dating younger and younger and younger athletes, and now there's actually a trend now, which is actually interesting, is that, people who've been married for years to the person that went, for example, Emmett Smith's wife, Patricia Smith, she decided to divorce Emmett Smith. He literally did nothing wrong. And she basically wanted to get the money, and she still got some years left. And that was her plan. She's like, listen, the kids are in school now. Our youngest is in college. I'm going to be free from you. And I'm going to take this money, and I'm going to go out and be with my girls and do all sorts of stuff. Actually, most recently, Steph Curry's mom is divorcing his dad, and they've been together forever, And so we're seeing these trends of certain people like, okay, well, listen, I no longer wish to be in a relationship. I want to test the market. I want to see what's going on here. I want to see how this is going to work out for me, and you'll see a lot of that with anything else. And then we also see men completely taking on the responsibility of raising the children and the mother having to pay child support to them because they didn't want the responsibility or chose not to, or something might have prevented them from it. It can go either any of the ways, but in particular with these particular people, like, my thing is, it's an excessive amount of money that you're asking for when you're asking for that amount of money. It's just like Dr. Dre's wife was asking for so much more money and complaining about everything. And I'm like, okay. And then they were talking about how his grown daughter, like, she was homeless and she didn't have any money or anything else like that. And now he wasn't giving her any money. He cut her off. And people were upset about that. I mean, there's many different ways to look at this. But that being said, I know Dawood got kicked off, but we got you back. I know Alexandria came to the conversation. We put there. Anybody else who wanted to be in there, let us know. It is actually 10:30, and we have not done any poetry at all. So that being said, the last
the conversation
thing we're
is real.
About, yeah, well, not the conversation. I mean, because it is real. I mean, because listen, for my thing. One of the best things, and I tell my son all the time, is when my son went to court and he said, I want to live with my dad. That was me growing up. I had to grow up at that point. And I tell him all the time, I said, this is what helped me find my spine, stand up, because I had to take care of you. And the results of that is so much like all the pain, all the frustration, all everything. When I look at my son now, I'm like, I fought for you. You know what I'm saying? I fought for you when you're here. And I think a lot of times when we're in that situation as men, when people are being unreasonable with us, like is very hard. Like, you know, I watch certain people. I watch certain people who are on this chat do above and beyond things as fathers that most people would never do. Most people would give up and quit. Most people would say, "No, I'm not doing it." I watch the same people. I watch some people who are mothers on this chat really make sacrifices that are beyond compare in every sense of the word, you know. But I think outside of the people that we actually know is because there's a willingness. We fail. We've done all these different things as parents, and then we pull ourselves together and we stand up. And that's what makes us pretty dynamic people, which is one of the things I love about doing War Council Chats, because you get to see how dynamic every single person is. But before we do that, we got to talk about something as goofy as hell. It's the dumbest thing alive. One of the worst challenges I've ever seen in my entire life.
The milk crate challenge.
The milk crate challenge.
I just saw that for the first time today. That idiot.
Black people, why?
This is idiotic. What is this?
I'm like, black people, why? Black people, why? Black people,
crazy.
Why?
It's just fucking stupid. I don't care what nobody. It's just fucking stupid. I was sitting here like, I hope you fall, dumbass. I'm sorry.
I've been watching
stupid.
People fall.
I've seen people go up on them crates on skates, rollerblades, and I'm like, if you fall and the corner of that crate hits you in the crack of your ass, you deserve every split that you got, every part of that split of your butt. It's just senseless. I don't get it.
It's funny because it makes almost as much sense as when they were setting themselves on fire and trying to put it out before they got burned.
Yeah, with the accelerant. And then jump in the shower like it's supposed to wash off the accelerant.
Right. How about a real challenge? You know what I'm saying? How about do a paragraph in cursive writing?
Come on.
How about? You know what I'm saying? How about giving me a 8-minute dialogue straight out of your mouth?
Right.
You know, How about that?
Without using a single curse word.
Right. And on top of that, thank you very much.
Man, listen, that's crazy.
It's a great challenge, man. It's a great challenge.
You want something crazy? Here's the crazy thing. This time last year, black people were fighting over chicken sandwiches.
Yep.
Right.
Every year, because I looked at my Facebook activity and I saw that I was complaining about the chicken sandwiches last year. Every year we get something to be distracted by. This freaking crate challenge is some brand new distraction stuff. But every year somebody decides, you guys are going to do this, you guys are going to do that. And what I liken this to is when I was younger, I remember I was going to high school, and in New York City, the jeans that everybody was wearing was Lee jeans. And you know what I'm saying? Like, my dad wasn't with my mom, my mom was kind of poor. So it took my mom a mad long time to get, like, 5 pairs of Lees for me for the whole week. So long story short, as soon as she got that last pair of Lees, somebody somewhere declared, y'all can't wear Lees no more. We got to wear Converse.
Right.
And my whole wardrobe got invalidated. And that's when I started hating these kind of trends, because here it is, my poor mom was struggling all her, you know, like basically for a year to put together 5 pairs so I could have a different pair of pants every day I went to school, and bum, one person somewhere decided we ain't wearing Lees no more. And I remember they was using Hall & Oates. They was like, shout, Lees are played out, and dudes was running up on you trying to steal your Lee patch. You understand? Somebody decided somewhere we don't wear Lees no more. And so, if that ain't mind control, I don't know what is.
It is.
I mean, well, Well, the funny thing that you mentioned everything else is that we you know, Malcolm Gladwell always talks about tipping points. And right, we as a people generate all of these tipping points, you know, like, for example, LL Cool J rolling up one leg of his pants and having it down, and then that becomes, it became a fashion.
I remember that too.
We dictate. See, the problem is we're a part of this whole thing where it's cultural imperialism. We generate culture at such a high rate that we never take the time to actually trademark or find a way to own the culture that we actually produce. And so when we go through these things and this culture happens and people, somebody changes the idea of what it is that we're supposed to be doing because we're supposed to be following these trends. And literally, we have people who come from big corporations who go into all these different things. It's like Mark, whatever his name is, famous designer, he started doing airbrush T-shirts and putting it on, you know, runways. And we're like, it's your airbrush T-shirts. And, you know, we've been doing this for years, but for some strange reason, that became a fashion trend. We do these tipping points at all times to change things, no matter what it is that we do. We're always constantly doing things, and these challenges are tipping points because we see somebody something and it's monkey see, monkey do. We want to be poppy. We want to put it on there. We want to put it on TikTok. We want this because the social media engagement is real. It's just like one of the things that happens, like the sisters who were doing all these dances, and then next thing we know, their white counterparts start doing the dances, and they got famous, got sponsorships and commercials and all this other stuff without ever giving credit to the people who found that trend, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, and literally they got paid, and then people started calling them out for basically borrowing the style and everything else because there's a cultural imperialism that we suffer from that we do whenever we do these challenges. Everybody wants to be the person to do it or be on thing because they know that it's going to engage them a certain way that we may or may not be prepared with. So the stupider the challenge, the more we do it. Just like the chicken sandwich. People were fighting the chicken sandwich, backing up places just to get chicken. I remember with the Popeyes myself, they had a chicken line. They had a regular chicken line. And I was just like, yo. I was like, I don't care about a chicken sandwich. Give me my thighs, please. I need that. You know what I'm saying? And it was just crazy, you know, because it's nuts. And Dawu knows how much Dawu knows every time I come home, it's the first thing I do. First thing I say to him is, where we going to eat? We going to Popeyes.
Yep.
Going to Popeyes.
Yep.
I'm like, no matter what, I get off the train, the bus, whatever, where we going? Popeyes. Let's go.
Let's eat pleasant. Yep.
Right. All that aside, we literally go through these different trends and everything else when we really should be starting trends. Hey, how about we have a financial literacy trend where we actually tell people exactly what they need to know about, you know, finances? How about we have an educational trend where we actually sit down and actually present information that you can actually use, that you can actually do certain things? And it's crazy because people don't really share like information unless you're in a network that shares information. Like, you know, most people won't even talk about certain things, which is nuts to me, but it is what it is. Which we suffer through anything else. All right. Somebody sent a question through. I'm sorry, I was supposed to bring that because they said that they were listening, but they said they don't have children. They said, I'm just listening, but I don't have kids. They said, I think the money for the child support should go into a joint account where both parents contribute to it and have access to it. All funds in the account should be spent on the child, and both parents have visibility where the money is being spent on. All right. All right, so that was another thing. Last thing, and then we got to do some poetry. All right. We're bringing this before the council. All right, so everybody feel free to contribute to this conversation. Your mate has cheated on you. Your mate has cheated on you multiple times. Your mate now has something they can't get rid of. What's your exit strategy?
Yeah.
Do I have it too?
No.
Oh, well, they brought that on
themselves.
What's
your exit strategy?
My exit
strategy? No. What is your exit strategy? What is your exit? You're going. You just got to figure out a way to go. What's your
I'm not going anywhere. He got to go. He got to go. He went out there and got it so he can go on back out there.
He can go back where he got it from.
Yeah, take it on back there and stay over there.
Where he got it from.
That's it. Why I got to go?
didn't leave the comforts of my home, go chasing something else. He went out there. He decided to go venture off into with Alice in Wonderland. Go on back in there in that rabbit hole. Go. I'm not going anywhere.
He was Alice in Funky Land, okay?
Wherever he, whatever land
technically
he was,
technically
he was
Alice
in Nasty Land after he went. And he didn't think enough. Not only did he cheat, but he really didn't give a shit because he didn't strap up. Now you want
right.
to come home and bring me something? You really was on a no-give-a-fuck vibe. Excuse me. But, I mean, no. Go on back out there with us. Oh, I don't even
yeah,
want
go back
you.
Where
no.
you came from.
Nope. Because my thing is, if you've done that and you were that inconsiderate where you couldn't even strap up to protect me, no. I can't trust you at all. No. Nope. Go on. Take it on. I don't care how much it hurts. I'm sorry. Because if you did it this time, you'll do it again without any consideration for me. And the next time, you might bring me home something. I might not even think about it because I love you just that much to forgive you and take you. Nah, nope. I'm not going to take that chance. I'm nope. Mm-mm. Nope. Mm-mm.
Well, being a person that went through this, actually, I can tell you what my exit strategy was. My exit strategy was to first get a room, because sometimes you may not think that you may not have the amount of money to pay for regular rent and you know, utilities and things like that. So if you have to leave, which you know, somebody bringing you something, you gotta leave, because like Danielle said, they could bring it to you and you could catch it. And in my case, I was lucky enough not to catch it. The person tried to blame it on me, though. And the person tried to say that I gave it to them. And when I got tested, I came up negative. And the person was flaming. Like I saw it. So I had to go. And but I did not know. Financially, I wasn't in a position to just be, you know, not like I am now. So what I did was I went to a limited situation first. First, I went to a room, and I just had a little bit of stuff. And then eventually, I moved to an apartment, and I got – you got to find something that's transitional. Because if you're in a situation and somebody gets burnt, what I'm assuming is that y'all are still intimate. Because if it just comes up out of nowhere, you know what I'm saying, like, and y'all are still intimate – not necessarily as frequently as you was before, but you still, y'all fuck from time to time. And you find out that this person has an STD, you got to go, because you stay in a situation, temptation may cause you to want to give up yourself, and when you do, you don't know if this person is an honest player. So,
right.
But at the same time, that being said, that means that you're still attached to that person. Not only sexually, but what we don't, I guess a lot of us don't factor in, is you're still attached to that person emotionally. And that's where the terminology that Jada Pinkett and them coined, entanglement. So to me, you have to go through a transition to get out of that. You have to get yourself into a room, and when you get to the room, you have to have therapy. And I mean weekly therapy, because generally, if a person caught an STD and you're still with them, then they're going to be gaslighting and using all sorts of manipulative tactics to make you feel guilty. It's because of you, I got this, all this other stuff. So the only way that you can really survive being manipulated and gaslighted like that is you need therapy. You need somebody weekly to comb out all of those strands. That's what my mentor says, like comb it out. Comb out all of those strands. So slowly but surely, you can be disconnected from that person, but you need to be physically away from them, because it's so hard to disconnect from somebody and you're still living with them. It's really hard, because every single day your mind starts playing tricks on you and telling you that, you know what I'm saying, like maybe I'm doing the wrong thing, maybe I'm being too harsh, and then your ego, which is the part of your mind that you always have to be careful of, your ego is always trying to, my mentor always says, your ego is the thing that seeks but never finds. Your ego seeks but never finds. So your ego is going to tell you, you should stay in this situation because maybe you fucked up a couple of times. You did this and you did that. So why is your sin any worse than that person's sin? It's all sorts of games that your mind will play on you if you stay physically in that situation. So you got to get out, you got to get a mentor, and do something transitional so it's not big. Because if you do something big, I guarantee you that your soul will crave to go back to comfortability, and it's very hard. It's very hard not to. That's what I think is an exit strategy.
I wish I'd have known that when I went through it. I really wish I'd have known this. I had access to that information or that knowledge because I went through it, but I chose to stay because I had no guidance. I didn't know any better. I just had a lot of anger. And, yeah, I did seek therapy for a long time, for a few years. If I didn't have that therapist, I even saw a psychiatrist. I probably would have killed my husband, honestly, because not only did he go out and make a baby purposely, his thing was a vindictive thing. He made me feel as though I was doing something wrong by rejecting the woman, okay, and the fact that she was pregnant by him. He did everything in his power to manipulate me and make me feel bad because I wasn't accepting it. Eventually, I came to terms with it because I fell in love with the baby. But with him, oh, man, it was a wrap. I stayed because of my vows. And I, like I said, I didn't have anyone to go to. I stayed until he took his last breath. But had I had a chance to do it over again, oh, I'd have made some changes. Trust me. But if I'd known then what I know now, nope. He might have died alone, honestly. Because I'm mad.
Okay, anybody else want to contribute to that? Anybody else? Okay.
It's okay.
It's because it's a deep, well-meaning thing. A lot of times when we're in situations with a particular person, that person may see us as the only thing that they can hold on to, because who's going to want them now that they know there's something wrong? Who's going to be in this particular thing? So they're gonna up their whole thing, especially if they're already malignant and a narcissist and are abusive verbally, emotionally, physically, you know, mentally. Then they're just going to ramp up. And they're going to continue to ramp up to the point that they won't even care about their freedom or being free or anything else. They see things as goods, items, and possessions. So in that sense, you know, that's when it's the most dangerous that it can be, because they're going to think like their life is over. And if you won't contract this thing with me so that you can be with me forever, then they're going to be like, if I can't have you, nobody else can have you. And they'll get to that side, that type of mindset, that type of ideation, but, you know, I digress. Before we get into the poetry portion, Ben Meadows, can you tell us what's happening in 50 Radio Universe, please?
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, join us tomorrow night for The Love Zone with the sexy divas of Epiphany, Miss VIP, La Pearl, La Negra, Rain, and Essentially Jeanette. Ooh, man. Thursday night is a get down with yours truly, and we don't know if J-Rob will be up to it yet, but we'll see. Friday night, Renaissance Poetry with your host, Keith Eric. Saturday night, y'all, Poetic Therapy with La Pearl, La Negra, and Stan, the man, Phillips. Sunday night is going to be the Inspiration Factory with Paul Sampson, Divine Inspiration, and yours truly, Poetic. Monday night is going to be Raw with Rain and author Larry Maddox, for real, the poet Douglas, the CEO himself. And we'll be right back here next Tuesday for one of my hobby shows.
Fly Speak. And actually, Fly Speak. We're going to have Fly Speak. We're going to have Hesna Muhammad, who is the daughter of Ossie Davis and Ruby D. She's a fantastic poet. Amazing. And she doesn't cap. Some people know her on Facebook. There's a certain person who's the daughter of somebody, and they be capping. She don't cap. Her work stands on its own. She's a phenomenal. She's a doctor She has amazing Birthmark Media, which takes amazing pictures. There's so many different things. There's so many different layers to this. And we get the chance to actually bring her here into the Epiphany Radio universe and really examine her work, interview her, and talk about the things that she knows. She's a living piece of history. And we are enchanted to have her here on next Tuesday. So it's going to be a pretty amazing Flash Speak. So make sure that you tune in. All right. So, and speaking of Flash Speak, since we were here and everything else, let's get to the music. We got a few minutes. We're going to go into overtime. But for the War Council people, thank y'all for definitely doing some War Council, because it was definitely needed. We had some really great conversation. I'm called Dawood, the shit starting troubleshooter. he's like, here you go. Here's a grenade. Let me throw this grenade up in here. Let me.
I thought Van
give
was gonna strangle
you.
Me.
Yeah. I was like, oh man. He's like, oh, son. He's like, I got kicked out, son. I was like, see, Blog Talk heard you. No, let me stop. No, we always need that. I know when we talk about different things, but good stuff to come. But literally, we got to get to these words, man, because we got some phenomenal poets on the line. We got a few minutes. We got more than a few minutes. But listen, if you're listening to us, it's 10:51. The Blog Talk lady is unkind to everybody who hears her. If you're not listening, you got to call in. The number is 319-527-6300. It is an open mic at this point. Everybody can get in, spit what you want to spit, say what you want to say. Just make sure that you keep all your love and your good vibes on full display. That's what we're doing right now. We're going to start at the top, work our way through, and go around with some poetry and make sure. You know, and I got some amazing poets on the line right now, so let's get to it. So let's start at the top with Angel Kim. Are you there?
Yeah.
Would you like to do a piece?
Yeah, I can do a piece. I wasn't expecting that, but I can do a piece.
Now, we mix it up. We're doing some Flash Speak open mic, so if you want to do a piece, the mic is yours. We're going to run through real quick and make it all happen.
What kind of piece are we doing?
It's an open mic, so do what you want.
All right, cool. I'll do this one. Call Cocoa Butter Conversions. I need you to come rub me into a deep sea of slumber, touching my cocoa butter skin as you meet where my ocean waters converge. All so you can drink of my endless supply, creating bright rainbows as I shower you with my overflowing waterfalls. Tell me, did that quench your thirst? Was that refreshing? No? Well, lay me down as you continue your quest to discover my hidden treasures of the diamonds between my thighs. I promise you, boo, I have an endless supply. So make sure you're ready to carry all that I have to give, because I promise you this won't be short-lived. Now climb my mountains and suck on my peace as you insert your pole inside my glory hole. I want to erupt like Mount Vesuvius, spilling my lava all over the place, creating sultry heat so hot you can feel its intensity. I'm loving this feeling that you're giving me, baby. I love sessions, create visual images that turn into epic movies. Now lay me on my side as you spoon with me, parting my lips as I wrap my legs around yours, pulling you all the way in. Grab my breath as you're kissing down my neck and my back. I love the feeling of your breath hitting my skin. It turns me on more and more. Dig into me, daddy. Fill me all the way up with your girth, stretching her wide open to welcome you inside. I want to ride you. I want you to bring out the cowgirl in me, baby. Let me climb on top and take you all the way in. Slowly work in the middle as I grab my breast and throw my head back. Slowly grinding and winding. Oh, yeah. I pick up the pace. I want to place my hands on your chest as I begin to bounce and bounce. Mm-hmm. Now grab my ass, baby, and hold me in place as you begin to drill into me, gripping me. I can feel you spread her open just so you can get every inch of this loving in me. Our bodies are rocking, and we doing this triathlon like we in the Olympics. Moving in slow motion, kissing and grabbing and slapping and choking. Temperatures rising as our intensity increases because you bring out that fire in every time you thrust into me. Mm-hmm. I want you to keep going, baby. Keep going. Keep going. Just like that until my volcano erupts once more, leaving me laying here in a cloud of haze as I have lustful memories as you leave me laying here, right here naked in this day. Poor.
Okay, I'm too young for this. That was decent, though.
Who said they was too young for this? Who said that?
Me. Me.
Technically speaking, I'm the only person that's too young for this.
Wow.
I wasn't prepared. I wasn't ready.
I wasn't ready. So when you, Mahavi, when you said open, let me stop. You said open. Y'all give it up. Y'all give it up for Angel Kim. y'all give it up for Angel Kim. You brilliant, you filthy individual. The Pearl of Negra, do you have a piece you'd like to share?
I do. It's called Life Has a Rhythm. The devil came for me today, and it was one of the most beautiful, exquisite approaches I've ever been presented with, almost flawless even. With an energetic pull, I would have happily and willingly gotten caught up in had I not been blessed with the strength of a lifted veil, my face. So, see, it isn't always about carnal lust or the physical act of sex. Sometimes it's just the intimacy that I crave. Because I believe music is life, and poetry is oral sex. And when you bring those two together, you have a pure, beautiful creation that touches all and cannot be mistaken for anything else because it is everything. Life has a rhythm. Give me a pen and a tune and see my world open to you through the colors of my vision and the sounds of my vibration. The devil came for me today. But my waters are still, and they will purify the aspects of your life. My life has a rhythm, but it can't keep in time with mine. That's that piece.
I love it.
Thank you.
Also, if you listen within the sound of my voice, you have approximately 15 seconds to call in, 319-527-6300. We're going to continue and finish up in overtime. You have 10 seconds left, and I'm just going to talk through the 10 seconds. So 4, 3, 2, 1. If you're within the sound of my voice, welcome to overtime. You've made it. And here, when we get into overtime, we just let things fly. We don't care. It's just going to happen. It'll show up on the playback, but who cares? It's not during the regular stream, so who's going to penalize us? Oh, actually, you know, Larry will fire us tomorrow, but he
Google virus tomorrow, but, you know, you'll just be on the clock till tomorrow. It'd be great. Yeah, I'll give up a round of applause for Danielle.
Yeah.
All right. And so we're going to go from you. All right, we're going to go from you to Sir Lawrence. Sir Lawrence, do you have a piece to share with us, sir?
Actually, I do.
Well, come on with the come on. Let me wait a second. I was supposed to play a song, and I didn't want to play through the thing. Because, you know, she did this for the piece. But, Sir Lawrence, whenever you're ready.
The jungle. These pumas and cougars sat in one bunch. Their tail tips moved beckoningly. All eyes fully locked on the target. Man-eaters ready to feed. As they licked their paws, grooming their claws to mask their salivation, the point they've all agreed. This licking and scratching and bumping up against trees can only do so much. Like going to the watering hole to drink. But when hungry, it's time to eat. True satisfaction involves this action. When you commit your attention, she will step out from the pack, letting her scent set the trap. She flicks her tail, but not too aggressively. Once your eyes move, she will strike the pose her body knows so well. The bait being presented as you keep following along. The first tip, does she need rope or thin thread to pull you in? It's a constant calculation. She must have you thinking you are winning. Blood is not what will satisfy their taste. It's that carnal loving they crave. Feeling their bodies being handled while absorbing your strength. But the whole objective is to take that boiling hot nectar, sinking in their claws until you forget one doesn't work without the other. That's when you will understand the bite of the C-18, carnal attraction trap. So if you do get bit, you'll be just another tip. Sir Lawrence.
All right, nice. Sir. Mm-hmm. So talking about.
Yeah.
Well, that's where we going. That's how we get into it. Let's go. All right. So we're going to move from a Sir Lawrence to one half of the Get Down. The man knows poetic, a.k.a. Wolverine, one half of the Get Down. Mr. Van Meadows, do you have a piece for us, sir?
Yes, sir, I do.
Well, I'm going to mute my mic, and the mic is yours.
Thank you. I want you to please me with possibilities that maybe, just maybe, in some loving realities, you will always be mine. Nobody else's, just mine. Gracefully remind me that you love feeding me you, and I enjoy your deep melanin too, thinking of how you cover my strawberry with your chocolate vanilla flavored cream so savory. Show me your fight between your ears as you gain more knowledge from the ancient gods as you bear a mold of an empress goddess, showing me the truth of your power, rendering me powerless. Hold my heart in the center of your attention while you massage the ego of my affection, helping me atone from past relationship sin so I can begin again. Begin unfolding the bruised petals of my heart while she shows me how she loves me from the start, breaking the generational curse of heartbreak, knowing that her lips and her words are a healing elixir for my soul to sip and take. Never mind the fact that she's been hurt too. Her focus is on me and what she needs me to do. Remember, I am a black melanated king. And that song buried in the depth of my soul she would sing to encourage the safe space she calls his peace. My eyes swell and water with an abundance of tears because she helps me with my greatest fears, the ones that plague my spirit. Shh. If you be still, you can hear it. You're not good enough. You are not good enough. The anxiety and nauseousness swelling up in my gut, waiting for the pain to come through my throat, but she says the words I definitely needed to hear. Baby, I got you. You no longer have to fear. I will protect that which God has designed me for. I will always protect your heart no matter what life has in store. And that's that piece.
Wow.
Work it. Work it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Get the phone from Michael Jackson for that. Just in case everybody knows, we are having a Michael Jackson celebration this Sunday on the Clubhouse app, the Honey Drippers. When Drip met Michael Jackson, or when Michael Jackson met Honey. Actually, I like that the other one better, when Michael Jackson met Honey. Yeah, we're doing all Michael Jackson tribute poems. Poems based on Michael Jackson, so make sure you check that out. Give it up for Van Meadows coming through, killing the piece. Of course, of course.
Appreciate you. Thank you.
I'm telling you. I'm sorry. You know when you listen to Michael Jackson, it just gets you in the mood. You hear that song, you just automatically just be like. If I wanted to, I could never
right.
I mean, I'm telling you, he'd just be in it. I'm telling you.
Get back to the show, Bobby.
I'm going to get back to the show. Get back to the show. All right. His poet, are you back? Are you here?
His poet,
are you back? All right. Hold on, let me turn this down a little bit. All right. I'm going to mute my mic, and the mic is yours.
Okay. I am in an extravagant domain. Kiss me from the crown of my head and make me feel oh so real that all your spirit is engulfed within me. Me to a place that is oh so majestic that your body and mind are conjoined as one even from a kiss. This kitsch which has lasted all of last night and has trickled over into this morning. This kiss which held the beginning of this fortress to fill of your body, your masterpiece, laying inside me hard and strong, unable to gain softness as we coil for all eternity. As you painstakingly take what is your rightful possession, as your tongue glides gracefully, extorting the utmost reflection of love and lust for me. This circus of emotion has me screaming and crying because in unison you are penetrating my body and my soul. And until this day, to feel this has been mysterious. Enduring this seductive passion which has utterly coasted every layer of my being, your taste is that of coconut milk and cherries. I lick my lips and relax my muscles as you slip down my throat. I am obsessed with your finesse. My palate has grown quite accustomed to your aroma and your savory. Ooh, like fine wine mixed with the ripest fruits you have drunk me tonight, and I am drunk in delight. I need no ice cubes for this delicacy, however, take comfort that you will be the one melting in my mouth. From the touch of my hand, your knees are shaking and your heart is beating way too fast. Rapidly, you are on the dawn of love, even more than the first time you fell. At the onset of this escapade, you were standing and I was sitting. I lost track of time and unaware of just how we happened in this yin-yang position of 6'9", if you must. The gold at the end of my rainbow, and oh, how lucky I am to have you to indulge on. This is a feast, exclusively for me. So flip me over. With such ease and strength, it's stunning to witness that you flip me over and enjoy a sweet surprise. When you take the tip of your manliness and you just take the tip of your manliness and you take the tip of your manliness and you just softly tease the entrance of my erogenous zone. Some call it taboo, but you have made it the sweetest painful pleasure, a concoction of joy and again pain. Slowly, you take every part of me and make me know all of me belongs to you. You command me to relax, to let you be easy, and I comply, for at this moment, you're in control. You kiss every inch of my back to make this particular experience velvety, that you feel so natural in each and every molecule of my makeup that I vow you are created for me. Swayed this utopia, my commitment to you is infallible and it's loyal and undeniable. Just as you are intrigued by this that I offer, I am possessed with all of you. Poem.
Oh, sorry. I was on mute. I forgot where I was for a second. I was someplace else. Had to come on back. I was like, I was on mute. Wait a second. Oh, damn it! I'm on mute. Yes. That poem was something on that. I'll give it up for his poet. Guess we're doing it right now. I guess we're doing it. We're just making it happen. Okay. Wow. All right. So we're gonna go to my sister. Hey, sis, are you there?
I'm here.
I'm here.
Peace.
Okay. Peace, what's going on? How are
you? Can you hear me? I'm good.
I can hear you.
Good. Awesome. Been enjoying the conversation.
All right. Well, do you have a piece for us, sis?
I have. Yes, I do.
Well, let me mute this music or at least continue to listen to it in my ear while you do your piece.
Sure.
The mic is yours.
I have traveled long to find you. I have endured a winding, nomadic existence, seeking after you, following your scent, tracking your movements. You came of age somewhere, a boy who needed a girl who needed a boy. I was a girl who needed a boy to become a woman. The click, click, clicking sound of a perfect fit, yet we were too young to see. Not enough time, not nearly enough torture, no wisdom. We couldn't know. I would meet you again as a man, and it would be like the first time, and it would be sweet, oh, so sweet, as only a girl aged out into womanhood by ancient trials could possibly experience, still barely comprehend. So you see, I had to become a woman. All those rituals flowed through my muscle, bone, and blood, beating and stretching and rounding me out with the memories and messages of all my mothers and sisters and daughters who tell me womanhood is special unto herself, singularly feminine, unabashedly like spring. You can't live without her. Tried, though, always feeling like something's missing, shucking and jiving, lying and procrastinating, hemming and hawing to fill the emptiness, sick of feeling like, well, anyway, I traveled long and far, wide, high, and low to find you. Just look at me. Tell me you see me, what I have been through without you. Tell me that though I am bruised and broken, rough around some edges with scars, that you will still have me. She would give indelible things, leaving intangible traces real of her being there, her aim, the center of your being. And here, where you're holding the truth of life, I now become your woman. Peace.
Oh, Holly, unmute
yourself.
And my sister dropped too, right afterwards, which is nuts. All right, that was for Seaway. Man, that was amazing. Now we got all this fire poetry. So we're going to bring in Alexandria, a.k.a. Eve, Innocence, the Snake Charmer, New Drip, 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 Drip. What's up? Alexandria, you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Hey. So you ready?
I am. I guess I may turn tonight.
Okay, well, listen, we'll turn up, and the mic is yours.
Okay. You're exciting, boy, come find me. Your eyes told me, girl, come ride me. Caution, this sign reads, slippery when wet. Beware of dog, no cat, she... and bites back. Uh-oh. This road is a dead end. Souls get snatched here, and if you plan to leave with yours intact, this is your warning. Don't come in. Come. Warning. When this honey drips, you niggas come too quick. Next time, you got me. Next time, you want redemption? You want a second chance? Do you know the definition of insanity? Einstein says it's doing something over and over, and you still came too quick. Okay, we can try this again, but I learned my lesson, and so... me first. I know a king bows to no one, but I'm wearing the crown now. So, can I have a kiss? Not on my lips. I want you to make out with my honey-coated clit. Devour my pussy like the death row inmate. This will be your last meal. Savor its taste. Swish it around your tongue now. Slide a finger in. That tickles. That's it. Right there. Faster. Don't stop. Oh. Yes, Daddy. I got you next time. Oh.
Yo. Like, I got you next. Aw, oh, that's messed up.
I got you next time. And the giggle. Oh my god.
And it, yo, the giggle gets people. And it's like, you're just gonna call her the giggling dripper. You know.
That was pretty decent.
That was
Thank you.
That was excellent. Man, this is nuts. Oh, okay. So y'all give a round of applause for her. And we're gonna go to our favorite Quiet Storm here on the Pippi Radio. So we'll be seeing her next Monday with Raw with Rain, introducing Rain. Rain,
good evening,
there?
Everyone.
Hey, Rain.
Hey, Diva.
Hey. Loving the show. Alexandra gets me with that giggle of hers, too.
That's what I'm saying. That giggle was life.
And Hob knows he's wrong, and he knows why he's wrong.
Yo, I am. I'm maybe going to say
no cap.
Myself.
No
I am.
Cap.
No.
No cap.
Yo, you understand. you would understand. Like literally,
no.
Like, because Ingrid hit me, right? So I was like, I'm doing double duty. So Ingrid hit me, right? So Ingrid hits me, mods me. And then Ingrid's like, yeah, I need some ratchet. Yeah, Mojave, come do some erotic poetry. You know, E&M was like, we done with her. That's it. Because, you know, Ingrid ain't got no filter. And she just be saying crazy. But Gia was all, oh, oops.
Oh.
Well, oops. Anyway. And I was like, listen. I was like, listen. She's going to cap about her pops for 10 minutes if you don't stop her. Make sure that you stop her. And she's like, I don't be capping. When she said, I don't be capping, I was like, yo, I almost passed out. I said, you cap all the time. Mm. I said, you always cap. I said, you never fail at the capping. I was like, yo, B, just do the poem, yo. Do the poem. Either give us the premise for the poems and do the poem. You know, just, anyway, I'm wrong for that. I apologize.
Yeah, you're wrong
for
that.
I didn't mean to do it. I didn't mean to do it. Anyway, it's on you, Ray. I'm going to mute my mic, and it's yours.
All right. Everybody else got a wet in here, so I don't have to bring all the wetness. I'm just going to be chill. If I had my way, I'd rewind time just this once. Take it back to the beginning, let down my guard, let you in, let you see the innermost parts of me. See, few have taken the time because honestly, few have truly seen me. But you did, didn't you? Even though I didn't want to admit it, you saw beyond rain, you saw past my pain, you saw me. Saw me in ways I didn't even see myself yet. Now I find myself imagining that your touch would feel like healing. That your mind would continuously feed me, and the universe knows that I am starving. Your words would affirm me, lift me, gift me, intrigue me, leave me breathless, incite me to surrender, and I would for you. Your eyes would take me on a journey, and I'll stay ready for the ride and oblige when you take that long detour to show me the surprise you have in store for me. How did you know I love surprises? Your smile would reassure me, wipe away my doubts, and remind me how there isn't anything that's more important to you than this. Your lips, soft, insistent, would devour my hesitation like, you know, that's how I like it. Perhaps you'd muse me, give my pen reason to move, because right now this well is dry. And with a name like Rain, that's a shameful confession to make. Tell me. How can I find myself in your embrace? I just want my soul to be revived and feel alive again. Like, I don't know who you are, but I'm certain that you exist. Our paths must have crossed somewhere between then and now, right? But how can I find you? Better yet, can you just find me? I promise I have a heart full of love, and if you have the time, I have a fascinating mind worth exploring. I live in a perpetual state of peace, so if you create a safe space for me to be me, you can rest here too. I'll provide refuge. I'm a creative, I'm ambitious and thoughtful, though I admit most really only get to see and hear Rain. She's the one with the voice, unafraid to speak her mind, but me, I kind of stay tucked away. I don't do so well on the stage, and well, I don't come easy, but anything worth having rarely does, right? If I had my way, I'd find myself falling for you, and you'd be there to catch me. I'd let down my guard, tear down my wall, and find myself trusting you. I'd never expect you to read my mind, but please listen when I speak. I mean what I say, and I say what I mean. Testing me isn't necessary. I drink your words from your lips, enthusiastically taste your dreams, confessions, concerns, and affirmations. Our kiss would be an exchange. It would be one of the many ways we speak life into one another. Could go on and tell you about all the ways we could play. But let me just say, it would be much more fun if we talked about that off the page. Now how about you find me, and we can both have our way. That's right.
Diva.
That was beautiful.
Diva.
Thank you,
ma'am. Girl.
Yes,
yes, ma'am.
That's what I'm talking about.
Thank you.
Loved it. I loved it.
Who I desire.
Thanks.
You know, we throwing all the tracks up in here.
Yeah.
So, good people, it has been a marvelous night with some amazing poetry by some of the best poets on the face of the planet this evening. Beautiful way to end this. We want to thank everybody who came out to 50 Radio Universe War Council, Times Fly Speak Open Mic, The Best of Both Worlds, good conversation, scintillating conversation, and of course, some really super dope poetry. So we want to thank everybody for coming out tonight and participating. Thank you to Angel Kim, Danielle, Sir Lawrence, Van Metals, His Poet, Alexandria, Rain, Dawood, Fasiway, and all that were listening and that took part and actually hanging out with us. So we appreciate you. Make sure that you check us out here every night. Every week on Epiphany Radio News, we got something different for you. We poet differently. Make sure that you check us all out. Follow all the people that you can follow on this particular network, and we've been rocking. So, with that being said, thank you for listening. Thank you for coming. We thank you for being you. Be safe, wash your hands, wear your mask, and be beautiful. Thank y'all for coming. All right, everybody else, we're going to end this episode. Thank y'all for rocking out with us once again. Thank you, His Poet. I want to make sure Angel Kim. So we're about to end this podcast. All right. Thank y'all for
one
coming.
Love,
God bless you. One love.
One love.
One love.
One love.
Peace, light, love.